coming and their entrance.
Do I need to use it?
we look at three different focus areas. We look at the audit of financial statements, whether it's fairly presented and reliable. The second issue is looking at the reliable and credible performance information for the university department and the performance reports, and if the entity is disclosed by the performance information. And the third area that we focus on is compliance with key legislation on financial and performance information. The types of audit opinions that we've got, the one that we like to be going to have in the public sector is called a clean audit, where we've got a unqualified audit opinion with no findings. So it means that the audit is material and reliable from the perspective that are clear and material in the statement. The reported performance information is useful and reliable, and based on the annual performance plan that is approved by CERT. And also the entity that observed and complied with the key legislation in conducting the day-to-day activities to achieve their mandate. When we see the second category, the yellow one, a qualified opinion with findings. So that means that the audit team produced financial statements without material misstatements that struggle to align their performance reports to the predetermined objectives and committed to in the annual performance plan. They struggle to set clear performance indicators and targets to measure their performance, to measure their performance against their predetermined objectives. Or they struggle to handle the reports reliably on whether they achieve their performance or target. And they struggle to determine which legislation they should comply with and implement required policies and procedures and controls to ensure compliance. We have included another slide with additional opinions. We've included them for information purposes, and I think we are very happy to report that none of the instances that we're talking about today has achieved any of these, so we will keep them for the sake of time. So for our 2015-16 audit outcomes and our key messages, we provided in a fairly summarized format. I think also when we started to note that when we sat around this table last year, the next audit for 2014-15 was not finalized. Now as we come to you today, the next audit for 2014-15 and 2014-16 have been finalized and have been included in these slides as a presentation. So the first column there, or the first block on the left-hand side, shows the three-year trends of audit data. So if we look at 2015-14, there were two entities that achieved a clean audit opinion. In 2014-15, it increased to three, and in 2015-16, it has stabilized at three entities. And we would like them to include the DOE, NAMSA, and the NNR. The other entities that have got findings with on compliance with their legislation or with predetermined objectives, EQF, Sunedi, and NEXA. And I think as we go, the important message here, I think that we'd like to convey is a lot of these entities are very close to or can move up in the category of three points. So I think it's a very good message for the portfolio. There are areas, we'll talk about the areas that need to require intense focus throughout the year and monitoring in terms of actions implemented. But a lot of it is solvable. So the compliance laws and regulations, the middle block there, we saw those numbers correspond there, that four of the entities struggled, had significant findings with compliance and laws and regulations. And if we move over to the annual performance reports on the third block on the right-hand side, we can see that for 15-16, on the quality, on the usefulness side of the annual report, there was one entity that struggled with it, it's the left-hand graph. And for the reliability, that means when we test what has been reported, we found that all of the entities could substantiate the reported performance with valid, accurate, and complete evidence, which is very good. On the key controls, the same group. Despite the portfolio receiving fairly good audit outcomes, there are still areas in these entities that we require focus on when they do their due diligence. changes in rate, we require the entities to do, if I can use, for example, NECTA and NEDI, we require oversight over compliance with laws and regulations to make sure that the processes you've got in place work like they should. So that this will account for how to keep a foot on the gas. When we look at the assurance providers per level, it's on the right-hand side of the column. The assurance providers mainly remain the same as in the previous year. And what we found is if you look at the top of the column, that is your first level assurance providers, those are all within sort of the entity. From senior management to some, the senior management provides some assurance, and I think that is reflective of the audit outcomes, where we got a lot of issues with compliance with all the regulations. We had material statements and financial statements that were still corrected. So your first level of defense is sort of where the focus should be. Management should make sure that the information that they present to the audit committees and the accounting authorities is incredible. Also, the accounting authority, we found that in some of the entities that require that provide assistance. Overall, for the portfolio, we've assessed the executive authorities to provide some assistance. I think the reasoning for that is there was a lot of intervention taken by the executive authorities that towards the latter part of the year, the filling of the next board, for instance, the content people to go facilitate some of the entities and their boards and their things. So we should keep that action lead to improved audit outcomes or change the audit outcomes in the current year, 16-17, and it wouldn't have necessarily reflected in the prior year. The good news is on the second level, the internal audit, we found that in the majority of the entities, the internal audit divisions work well. And this is an important tool, the internal audit, for any entity to use to assess their controls throughout the year, whether the controls work as they should. They also can help you to assess whether the action plan that management has put in place to address audit findings have the actions that have implemented have been done so. And then more importantly is that just not to say that I've done something, but also to look at whether the action taken mitigates the risk that you had in the first. So does the new control that I put inside, does it now prevent me from incurring irregular expenditure? Does it prevent me from significant non-compliance with procurement laws and regulations? So that's very important, and I think we've got a strong term here and we'll just start the game to have a really clear about the action plan of the entity to make sure that controls we can mitigate the findings really, really works. On audit committees, we have one or two audit committees where we have certain issues, and I think we'll talk about it later. If you look at Texas environment where the board was depleted and didn't comply with the Nuclear Energy Act, it also affected the subcommittees of the board, which then affects their operation in the previous financial year. On the portfolio committee, we also assessed the portfolio committee, and I know this is always an interesting one. We've included the criteria that we look at the bottom of the slide there on the right-hand side when we look at the committee. So it's basically to look at the oversight roles in terms of the robust budget vote process, review of does the committee review annual reports, including audit reports, we look at quarterly reports, we follow up on progress made by entities to address poor audit outcomes, recommendations made in relation to key audit matters, follow up on key audit matters reports on the committee's prior year interval art, and therefore we assess the committee as provide assurance in the review. When we look at performance information, we've expanded on the programs that we've audited and the usefulness and reliability. When we look at usefulness, what we're talking about here is pretty much the planning side. The annual performance plan that the entity sets up, we look at whether that is smart, whether that's well-defined, whether there's technical indicator descriptions, those kind of things. So from a portfolio committee perspective, as I said, when the entities come and provide this, it's important to have a plan, but it's more important to have resources attached to the plan. Who's going to do it? Do I have the money? Do I have the people? Do the people know how they're going to do it? At the end of the day, you have to report on the performance that does. So as you can see, there's a pretty green picture here. When we go up to some on on usefulness. Now, the problem that we have with Canary with usefulness is that the annual performance report was not based on the approved annual performance plan. They revised the annual performance plan late in the year and used that as basis for reporting on the annual report. However, the liability side, then we test the actual reported performance. And then we look at whether we can find evidence. We look at whether the information is valid, accurate, and complete. And I'm pleased to announce that all of the entities we found that the reliability, we didn't identify any significant issue on the reliability. On the last two day on the slide, EQF and the body, EQF, they didn't submit an annual performance report, as they are still, as they stated in terms of the FMA, still undetermined. Nirwadi be included, but Nirwadi still hasn't submitted financial statements for the previous year or the current year. We also look forward now to the capacitation of Nirwadi that we're going to start with the financial statements which have been tabled in the meeting. On the quality of the performance information, the one thing that we also look at, the same as the financial statements, we look at what we got initially, we test it with the evidence that we get and see if the evidence supports the reported information. If we look at the two entities that had to make adjustments to the annual performance report, the test and some heading, they did correct those, we did audit them, and therefore they achieved, if we look at the circle, achieved the any significant findings on the reliability of performance information. If we look at compliance with rules and regulations, and I think when I started the presentation, this is an area that requires, I think, the most focus on, and this is an area that we need to address with action plans to make sure that we avoid this going forward. Look at material statements and financial statements. We have SET, Saneri, Nexa, and EQF. Now, this is one of the areas that we also say the entities we recommend that they do it quarterly, that they do a full set of financial statements, full reconciliation. And I know it's a lot of work, but this is almost like exercising. The more you exercise it, the better you get at it, and the less mistakes you make. Also, if you look at three entities in terms of irregular expenditure, that was as a result if we go down to management of procurement and contract management. Then you also have strategic and performance management issues and other non-compliance that the next side essentially will get to later. So if we look on the right hand side, it's just a graphical display of what the outcome would have been if the entities didn't correct the material mistakes to the financial statements. So there was it's the same for both years. The comparative is fairly the same. So that's the focus area for the entities going forward. Then if we look at the unchecking of the unauthorized fruitless and wasteful and irregular expenditure, you can see that the light blue block is from 2013-14. Then the darker blue block is from 2014-15. And then the dark blue is in the current financial year. So there's been a lot of irregular expenditure 3 years ago. It came down in 2014-15, and it's even lower in 2015-16. And we hope that next year it will be much less, if not, it cannot be gone. Because all of the entities are now fairly familiar with what is the expenditure, the compliance framework that's coming into place with the PFA, they should be pretty mature in their systems and their processes to hopefully improve in this regard. We've split on the right hand side the first three further determine the legal opinion that government is still overall responsible for funding this liability to the start to make sure that we just decommission our nuclear waste and the buildings that we're taking. So the NEXA included these amounts in their financial statements, which we audited from a looking perspective, the financial statements, and we were happy with the amounts that they presented. Then on Saneri, the team had quite a few interactions with Saneri, with annual performance plans to make sure that the funding from the previous year was didn't reoccur in the current year, so they addressed the SMART criteria in terms of the annual performance. If we look at the top three resources that we say persist or that prevented entities from achieving the audit, we say slow response by management to address audit findings and to take actions where appropriate. There were also a lot of instabilities or vacancies in key positions. And then I think the story is by the executive authority to address some of the issues that existed in the entity before board, before vacancies, to address some of the issues there. Then we met with the minister in August, and we got commitments on the specific issues that we saw from the energy portfolio, which is presented there in the middle block. To say that the first one there is to have a transparent process build nuclear program, hopefully similar to I think the details that the INR, similar to what was done in the independent output department. Also, it has requested an independent domestic audit and set the DZF to review all the contracts that were awarded. The vacancies will be addressed in the third block there in the new financial year assessed group has identified the full physical vacancies in the urgency. The identified dedicated project team will be a participant and conform to address the contract management provisions and funding thereof. This is in the HRSA environment where there's a gap between the money available and the funding the funding obligation that they've got. And also said that the mental gap is clearly national vision in the market solution. And then also identified what we strive for is also getting the witness from the portfolio committee on how the portfolio committee is going to action plan by the entities to address the findings from the previous year. So we can also talk about that and see how we find the resources throughout the year. See, and then that was very, very briefly the presentation. I don't know if the members want us to go through the Word documents as well.
Thank you, Chief. On the page on the page 7. We summarise the audit outcome, the movement of the audit outcome of each of the entities. And I think from here you can see that most of the entities are in yellow. The guys that have moved was NASA and NNR. They had unqualified with findings and the Department of Energy in 13-14, and for the last 2 years they achieved clean audit opinions. On the significant emphasis of matters, these areas are we as the auditors include these findings in our audit, or not a finding, we include these references in our audit reports to things that management has already disclosed in their financial statements. So this is not a finding per se, this is just to make the reader aware that there's something that we want to take them to take note of when they read the financials and when they analyze the information. So in the test group, on page 8 at the top there, we included a significant uncertainty where we say, if you look at note 41 in the financial statement, Petro SA has gone off place of effective management change from South Africa in September 2012, and the company became a tax resident in South Africa. Now, the South African income tax legislation does not deal with tax treatment of opening balances of capital expenditure on property, plant and equipment prior to becoming a tax resident. The entity is engaging the South African Revenue Service and National Treasury to get clarity on this regard. And also looking at the deductibility of fees paid to a previous lender for South Africa for income purposes. Then also in note 41, Petro SA notified employees on 24 February 2015 that there's a possible headcount reduction based on operational requirements that can come. It is not possible to measure the mandatory obligation arising from this notice at this time, or is it practicable to estimate the magnitude or the possible timing of payments in this regard. And no amount has been provided as a result for this by the entity. Also, there was a material impairment done by the entity as disclosed in note 5 of the investments and subsidiaries. It was impaired by 49 million rand. And also the loans to subsidiaries and loans associated to the separate were impaired by 81 million and 24 million rand respectively. Then also, I think as we talked about, when we talked about Petro SA, the funding shortfall for the rehabilitation provision is disclosed in note 26 of the financial statement. And we also included an additional matter paragraph to refer to the review, the investigation that the minister has implemented at the strategic fuel fund, and the details in that regard. On next up, we refer the user to the operating loss that the company made in the year of 86 million and we said we also refer to note 44 in the financial statements for the users to say that there are processes in place to fund the phase 2 liability of 480 million rand that Nexa needs to complete certain processes now in this year, and then they have to go to the department, to the Nuclear Liability Management Committee, to prepare documents and to get approval to go to Parliament and Cabinet to get Cabinet approval to fund the 500 million rand for the phase 2 liability. Also, in the irregular expenditure, in the 2014-15 audit, we identified irregular expenditure. The full quantity of this irregular expenditure was only determined by management now in the 2015-16 year, and it was disclosed in note 45 as 128 million rand for the financial year, for the two financial years together. On predetermined objectives, I think we've talked about most of this. It's just a summary there to say what we look at in terms of usefulness. That's on page 9 for the members. And we highlighted the findings that we had there for some needy that had issues with the plan that had informed the basis for the annual performance report.
And then we also talk about the material misstatements and provide a little bit more detail of which programs were affected by that concerning the NSEC.
Compliance with laws and regulations, we've talked about most of the entities, material misstatements and theft. Expenditure management, irregular expenditure that was incurred. And the SFF non-compliance, we've talked about. The sale of not informing National Treasury and also the loaning of the oil to the service provider. Material misstatements in EQF, we've talked about. Saneri, we've talked about the material misstatements and the strategic plan, not forming the basis of the annual report. Expenditure management, Saneri, procurement and contract management, next up. Also subject to the non-compliance that we highlighted here, Nexa, is that they didn't submit their financial statements within 2 months after the year end. That means they didn't give us their financial statements by the 31st of May. They gave it to us on the 25th of July. But we have managed to sign off the audits and complete the audits in time for Nexa to table and form part of this presentation. The financial statements were subject to material misstatements. Shareholders' contract was not concluded. The minister was not signed off by the minister as required by Treasury Regulation 2921. Expenditure management, irregular expenditure was not prevented. Procurement management, we've listed the findings there on procurement management. The main finding was that the evaluation criteria did not clearly indicate the applicable values for the different criteria specified. On how the entity was to analyze the functionality criteria. This has been subsequently corrected after July or August 2015. So that issue has been addressed. We talked about the enabling legislation, where the board was not constituted as required by the Energy Act. Other matters of interest, we've talked about in the slide show, so I'm not going to go through that. And then here we just provide a split in the irregular expenditure for the different entities over the last 2 years of irregular expenditure on pages 14 and 15. And fruitless and wasteful expenditure also included, pages 16. Key drivers of internal control we've dealt with. And also the assessment provided by assurance providers we've talked with. Here we included the new commitments made by the minister to address findings. And then we included the assessment of the portfolio committee. So I think the rest have all been dealt with, Chair.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much. Can I go?
Are you ready to go?
Ready to go.
You ready to go? And just before your question, just just make a few comments. So the Department of Energy is here. If you look at the overall improvement over 3 years, so it's clear that if some steps are taken, we can move an additional 2 entities to. So it's should be able to meet both the needs and the next after he will have the problems in the next one. So I'm sure if you are able to pay attention to that, we might still have significant issues with itself going forward. On the portfolio committee, especially to you and our members, so we please stress a positive commentary about the role we play. But there are going to be issues with regard to whether we're following up on the implementation of the recommendations we're making in the BRRR report going forward. It's an issue that we discussed last time. What to address that? The next thing, just comment. I'm sure we'll have some discussion at Bunda Nona Fandali. We need to have some serious discussion about this if we have see what's going to be done with this entity called EQF. Because if its status is not resolved, it will appear like this in our reports in the future. Actually, if on page 18, the 10 million barrels, if you can just disclose what's the amount in rent, I can see that the 10 million liters of diesel is amounts to 18 million rent, so the 300 barrels. So if we can have the amount then both for the 300 barrels, 10 million barrels. I know you did tell me what the figure that is then the financial statement. That's all. I think we can ask our questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I just want to say, with all the happenings in PetroSA and the CEF, the other entities will be very lucky this time around, because I will be focusing on what's going on there. Not that there is not other problems. So if I don't get around to them, then it is because the other issues to me is very important, because it is large amount of monies. Now, I want to thank you for your presentation. I think it is very honest and frank. And I think that, it's very worrying, especially for the reasons I have just stated, which is the biggest problem would be with PetroSA and all the money we are bleeding there. Can you maybe give us some more information on specifically those issues? You talk about 300 barrels of oil that was loaned to a company. I have no information on that. I would like to know who that company is and why should we take the loss? Has enough steps been put in place to try and recover the money, and are you satisfied with the explanation you received of why this money would be written off? I would like to know that. And then, the 10 million barrels of oil, I would like to know, can you provide us with advice as to how we can, recover the loss that was incurred by the illicit sale of our oil, the fuel stock reserve, the strategic oil stock that was sold. And then you keep talking about the accounting authority, but that's somebody nobody knows who it is. because you know, when I want to lay criminal charges, I need to lay it at the account. I need to charge the accounting authority, and there's no name there, so it's very difficult to find this person which you call the accounting authority. So maybe we should put names with the accounting authority, or you should explain more who this accounting authority is. I mean, it's a person. It must be somebody that must take responsibility for it. It must be a person. It can't be. And if it's not one person, it must be a group. But you must identify that group. I think we as a portfolio committee are going to struggle with this problem, because I've asked a lot of people, you know, who the accounting authority is, and then we have different views on that. It could be the board, it could be the CFO, or it could be the minister. You know, please explain to us who this accounting authority is in these instances that must take responsibility for this. Then, you know, the equalization fund, EQF. I'm very worried about what you have told us. Oh, just to add to the last question as well, I see on the CFF report on 11, of your submission, the objective contribute to security of energy supply. No material findings reported, and no material findings reported on the reliability and the usefulness of that. I mean, does it say anything that our security of supply has not been compromised by the sale of all our oil? I mean, we don't have it, so how can we have the security of supply? I just wanted to ask that, and if you report on the security of supply or not. Then I wanted to ask, you know, you talk about 10 million barrels of oil, diesel that was bought, and there were irregular expenditure, and the right procurement process was not followed. Can you just give us some more information about, surely you have investigated it, and you probably have information to share with us on that. It's very fuzzy and high level, but I would like you to go into a little more depth on that, if that is possible. And then, you know, coming back to the 10 million barrels of oil, how do we recover the loss? Did you quantify the loss in your investigation, you know, the price that we could have gotten, the price that we sold it at, and now the price that is sitting in the money that is sitting in the equalization fund? And the equalization fund having material, it's very worrying now to see that they didn't give in their reports, and they are sitting with the money, the operates from the OLED. And then, you know, if you maybe can give us some advice, if it's possible to if the oil was illicitly obtained, if we could, as a portfolio committee or as government, can reverse the sale and just give the people back their money, because, I mean, you can't just steal from government and then hope to get away with it. It's the highest authority in the country. And if somebody illicitly took our oil or obtained it and it's still in our possession, then we just give the people back their money and there should be no problem. You know, unless a lot of money has been given to steal sweeteners and a lot has been gone into corruption and fraud, then it would be more difficult, you know, to return the money. So that is my question. So I hope we get another bite at Jerry later on if we have some time, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to first comment the presentation. I think it's very much informative. We are now going to step by step understanding our role on oversight. But I have got some few questions here. On page 9 of the first presentation, you talk about the level of insurance which the senior management did not provide the required levels candidate?
Not possible. The thing was that we established that it is one. They did not do that. The second question is, I think we had enough about the recommendation. The problem is that every after audit, you give recommendations. But sometimes those recommendations are not met or are not implemented. Now my question is, do you have power to investigate the wrong findings, including those recommendations you would have made to a certain entity or department which is not compliant, or you are limited to advices or recommendations? So I want to get clarity on that. But the rest, I think, we will just take follow up as and when we are given the direction. Thank you.
So, as you know, respond to the question, just two things for the future. The one is, can we talk about the going concern data supplements and how serious that could be? Because excellence was something that has got to be avoided. The second one, Petra's A is required to have the rehabilitation liability fully funded within the next 8 months. And this is a large liability. Now, from the investigations of the how is this going to be done? And I see there's a commitment from the holding company. But realistically, can this be done? We have some comfort that Petros SA will be able to fund this liability. So just those two. So thank you, Kenan.
Thank you, Chair. I'll deal with some of the questions overall, and then I'll pass along to my colleagues on the more specific ones on the SFF, the money and the of those questions. I think just to start off with a question is, our mandate is to audit and to report. And I think it's through structures like this, when we interact with the portfolio committees, that we provide you with advice to write reports, to make recommendations to the executive authority where the accounting authority are not taking place. And I will talk about the accounting authority in most of these entities are the board of directors, unless you get to the department where it's got the accounting officer as the director general. But it's a public entity, the accounting authority is the board of directors. And the board of directors are then governed by the specific enabling legislation, like NEXA is governed by the Nuclear Energy Act, that tells you how the board should be made up and who should sit on it and what their duties are. And then also, we have in the past issued a booklet to all entities to say that What remedial actions are there? If the committee wants, we can send it. I've got a short summary, and we can send the booklet again to who's responsible for what. But basically, the accounting authority needs to take accountability for all the things that have gone wrong, and they need to implement and prevent these things going forward. They need to put actions. Where the accounting authority or accounting officer does not do this, the minister should then take action against the accounting authority or the accounting officer in that regard. On the levels of assurance provided, like I indicated, we've summarized here, let me just get to the slideshow here, the top of the causes. If we look at the level of assurance provided, in the majority of instances, this is affected by the instability and vacancies in management. If I look purely at the Nexa team, for instance, the finance team has been severely depleted over the last financial year, so they contributed to the material statements. Therefore, management does not provide you with the required level of assurance when you get financial statements. And then once again, that's why we say practice it more regularly and have processes in place to do it when we do full reconciliations throughout the year, that the process is bigger than the person. So that your process will stand the test of time even if you lose the person here or there. And also if we look at senior management is responsible for the implementing of policies and procedures. Now if you have areas like non-compliance and procurement and legislation, material misstatements, annual performance plans that are not used to perform the annual performance report, those are issues that should be identified by your management, that should be implemented by your management, and that is the main reason why we basically say that management provides some assurance in this regard in our assessment. On the issue on the reliability and usefulness of SF, SFS, let's call it SFS report. What we look at is whether what is presented is reliable, accurate, and valid. So we don't comment on the performance of the achievement. Our job is to basically get credibility of the reports presented in the annual report. So that means the portfolio committee then can take that report and interrogate it. What is reported there is supported by evidence. We don't look at it deeper. We look at whether that falls within the mandate of the entity when we assess it for usefulness purposes, but we refer also, most of our reports say to the user, please go and look there. On these pages, the performance information, there that the entity talks about how they performed and then you can go and make your assessment from there. So we don't, we test validity, accuracy, and completeness of what is reported. Get to the going concern status at Nexa. Yes. I think Nexa has implemented several measures to do to manage their cash more effectively. If we look at the group, they've got a varied responsibility. They've got a research responsibility, which is funded partially by government at this stage. They've got the rehabilitation that they need to conduct, which is also funded partially by government. Then within the entity, they've got several commercial activities. If we look at the group, the NTPR group, the NTP Logistics, Domatec, Falchem, and a lot of, especially the NTP group's profits, contribute to Nexa's ability, if I can call it this, making money at this stage. The issue that we raise there is if we look at the new funding of the phase 2 liability, is that process needs to happen fairly soon to secure the funding for the phase 2 liability, so that Nexa doesn't have to worry about that to decontaminate that once it becomes a problem. But also I think if we look at the newly announced involvement of Nexa in the nuclear, the procurement of fuel for the nuclear build program, if that goes ahead, all we're saying is that, you know, I think Nexa as an entity should just be think, looks after, looked at, and see that whether we are happy with the mandate as it is, the research, that enough money and time is spent in research, and then for the commercial side, how is that going to be funded and what's that looking like forward, going forward, so that Nexa doesn't find themselves in a position where they run out of cash, where they've got this important mandate to do. And like I said, the research part is basically you don't get money for research until very, very later when you make a success of this. Then on the process for Petro, so for the SFS and the Petro SA, I'm going to pass the mic along to my colleagues.
Okay. And before I pass it on, to add on the question about the board, I guess one of the members could start with the chairperson of the board, because now you're looking to address a specific group of people, because in terms of section 51 of the PSMA, there were very specific responsibilities, safeguarding of assets, collecting all the revenue, putting together a financial and risk management system, and so on and so forth. So the chair of the board would be there.
They realized that they were also sold what they refer to as unpayable, so which means it's what they have in the tank, they can only pump up to the specific level. So after they realized that, they then had to make a reversal by showing a liability in their books that we have sold this part of unpayable to those buyers, therefore it will mean that we owe them part of that amount. So basically, the invoice amount that they had was totaling to 4.1 million, but then after they had to regret the sale relating to the unpayable, the portion, it now went down to 3.9 million. And then with the 300,000,
and have something, I don't understand that. I've heard this before. Can you explain? People have been explaining that you see if so there's a in this tank, when you get to some level, then there's a portion that is not useful, something like that. So, but it was sold, assuming that it is 10 million liters, but 20% of it was actually useless. So can you explain that? Now you're saying something that we sold for something and later discovered that in fact there's going to be a shortfall that must be shown in the books. Because we sold as part of the sale, we sold something that we're not supposed to have sold. Can you explain that? I don't understand.
Thank you, Chair. Basically, what had happened is that when they were concluding this transaction, they didn't really consult those people who are basically dealing with this part, where those people will tell them, when you are selling, remember you can only sell up to this level. So that wasn't done. That's why later on they discovered that okay, we have basically sold what we have oversold basically. So that's what has happened. And Chair, I'm thinking I think the SFM also will be able to maybe explain further. But that's the information that we got, and they said okay, they realized that now they have a liability because they won't be able to give them these barrels that they promised they'll give them. So they from as auditors, we were satisfied that they they managed to show it in their books, okay, already we are always this bias because we can't defend everything that we have promised. So that's what I've said.
Okay, no.
Just
we can continue answering the other questions. But I suppose, honourable members, this is what has got to be followed up as a fact. I don't know, they must have been in their heart not to go find them. You know this thing about at what time this thing happened, at the time of the year this thing happened. And so they must have been in their heart. So not to have found out exactly what they say. So we need to check that with them. But there's the second thing. That we raised, that we now add to the laws. Remember the thing, they didn't check, the age didn't check. Think about what was the actual price at the time and what they sold it. So that's the first problem. Now there's now the second problem, that they sold something that said they shouldn't have sold. So that has got to be quantified. It will not be in this report, but at least from the perspective of the state, we have got to quantify the total loss. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair, members. I'd just like to add a bit of clarity with regards to the unpackable stock. When the unpackable stock is mainly kept, it's mainly there for the purposes of moving around crude oil within the tank. This is for external customers. And as part of that crude oil for 1.1 million barrels, normally it moves between the pipelines into the different tanks. As my colleague has rightly explained, the entity did not necessarily consult the operation site before the deal was contracted out. And then just to add a bit, with regards to the liability for the unpumpable stock, the entity has shifted some of their funds into a foreign currency denominated bank account, which is earning interest, although the interest earned will not necessarily equate to a full amount once added to the funds that they've set aside to set off that liability to the third party. There is quite a substantial amount they actually pay the entity to settle the liability for the unpumpable stock. So, can I hand back to my colleague?
Yeah, thank you. The 200,000 barrels that was loaded to the name of the company is EnviroShop.
EnviroShop.
And it was about 60 million rounded off. And there was a question related to this 200,000 barrels loaded to the NASDAQ in Japan. The feedback that we got from FSF was to say now they are under legal action being taken against this company, so they are still busy with that process of taking legal action. And from our side, with our interactions with FSF, we've realized that we don't believe that the proper due diligence was being carried out by the entity, because then they would notice in advance that they can't have a dealing with this company, to then be unable to return back to those collateral funds that have been loaned to them. So we basically say in that regard, when you look at the PFMA, they didn't really safeguard the assets of the company, which now has to talk to the responsibility of the accounting authority who holds the board. So we believe that not enough steps were taken to make sure that this contract, when they enter into that contract, everything was in order, the supplier or the contractor will be able to send those barrels. So basically, the legal steps being carried out, auditors will follow up on those and be able to give feedback to the members. The next question relating to the 10 million barrels that was sold. The question was to say, can we provide this advice on how to recover the loss, and if we can also quantify the loss. So basically, with our audit processes, we have noticed that the SFF has sold those barrels at the time when the market price was at the lowest. So at that point when they were trying, it was at the lowest point, and one thing that we said that risk management can also explain to say why did they choose then to sell this oil at that point where the price was at the lowest. But when we do our calculations, because then we'll take the cost price that they had and the selling price, they basically made a profit. So there was no loss. But the question is to say why are they selling at the time when the market price is at the lowest? And also considering the fact that if they need to repurchase, when we look at the currently, the price has significantly increased, so it's going to require a lot of funds to repurchase this coin. But when it comes to loss, we can't exactly say there was loss, there was no loss, but they bought at the point when it was at the lowest. And I think management should be able to then explain why they saw that time being the appropriate time for them to conclude that transaction. And when we look at the correspondence with the minister, when the minister was giving them the permission to sell, we noticed that there was a short period where they received this correspondence from the minister, and then immediately 3 days afterwards they were already communicating with the buyer. So from our side, we think it was a rush process, but we didn't really get to a point to say for management to explain to us why did you rush this process. And we've asked them to say, if you were to wait until maybe 2018, what would be the difference? And that question, they didn't really answer us. And I think it's something that the members can obtain clarity from them.
Sorry, while we're still on that one, Chair, I just wanted to also put in some recommendations, because now this stock sale rotation is almost like a new spring within SFF, because historically they were holding just the stock and then they rent out any excess capacity to the oil companies. They need to have very strong processes and procedures around this thing. Like you're saying, it felt like a rush process. I've gave your delegations of authority. Who must approve what? What due diligence must we do before we conclude these transactions? Have a stock rotation policy in place, because even after year end, we understand there was no such policy approved. You know, put in policies and procedures. Just safeguard your assets or create a whole system. Now that you know, if you say this is a new stream, you know, this stock rotation and sales, so that you know, fix your prices. What am I selling it these at? And so on.
The next question was around the accounting authority. I think my colleague has responded to that one. The security of supply is deficient and compromised. So basically when they were concluding this contract, there was a clause in the contract to say the SSF, it happens that we need oil, there's a shortage and there's an emergency, then the contract does display that SSF will then have to go with those buyers and borrow the contract refer to SSF having to borrow from those buyers, and then the one contract refers to SSF having to buy back at a price that is existing at the time when they are buying back. I think the risk on that one is that currently we know that though the oil is still sitting at the tanks, the SFF tanks, but should those buyers decide to move the oil out of the tanks of SFF, then I think the security then will be an issue, because then even though SFF has the right, at least the buyer also has the right to move out everything from the tanks. So that's the problem. But if the oil is still there, then we can rest assured that SFF has the right to buy them to go back and go off or repurchase or buy back that point. The other issue that we, when we were interacting with them, we've asked them about the mandate. Because you say your mandate is to hold this strategic store for the benefit of the government. If now you have sold it, and we don't see any plan to repurchase or to also take care of this, what will happen to your mandate as an entity? So that is something that the event also responded to, and I should think maybe the members can be able to ask them, say, this is your mandate, now you are shifting it. What can we say about the mandate? The other issue was to say, this sale might also attract the tax, because currently they are exempt from tax. So we've asked them to look into those issues of tax. So if now they move to trading, they might be maybe liable to pay tax. So those are the issues that they're still looking into for going forward. I think from the questions that I've noted, the other one that is not related to the 10 million barrels, the one related to irregular expenditure where they bought the 10 million because of the with this one, we've noted that they didn't really follow the proper processes, procurement processes, when they were buying that the diesel from the man. So that's why it has now attracted the irregular expenditure. And, they did identify themselves and they closed it in their financials. But the issue was for them not following the proper tax procurement processes, so maybe tendering or calling out for competition. Thank you.
Good morning, Peter. With regards to the abandonment provision question for Petro SA, it is a challenge for the company at the moment to come up with that, the shortfall. But it is engaging with the relevant role players to find out, to get support whether the legislation that, the deadline for the implementation of the legislation cannot be shifted further out, or whether Petro SA cannot be exempt to a certain degree from complying with legislation and to buy more time to come up with the shortfall for the abandonment provision. So they are engaging with the Department of Energy, the Central Energy Fund, National Treasury, the Petroleum Agency of South Africa to find a solution to the shortfall for this abandonment provision. Currently, they have about 1.9 billion in an abandonment vehicle as part of Petro SA, but they won't be able to come up with the 8.8 billion looking at their position that the current is sitting in. They won't be able to come up with the 8.8 billion by February 2017. That's how our system covered, and that's why they need the support of the other organizations within the energy sector.
The last issue is just on the powers to investigate. The auditor general, we've got mandatory audits that we conduct, and that is on the report on the financial statements and the predetermined objectives and compliance with laws and regulations as we. We've got discretionary audits that we can do to report on factual findings with regard to financial misconduct, maladministration, and impropriety based on allegations of matters of public interest. And then we can also do special audits like performance audits. But other than that, can we prosecute, can we do that? That is not within our mandate. That is up to the other Chapter 9 institutions that are out there. So our main function is to make management and such as like a minister or the executive authorities and the portfolio aware of these things, to take the appropriate action in terms of the acts that are out there, PRECA and PFMA, and these things, and then for that entity to follow it up. Then what we do is in the next year, like in the instance of SFF, where there's an investigation ongoing, we'll look at whether that investigation has been concluded,
and the correct consequences have then been applied in terms of the BFFA by the accounting authority, or the directors, or the accounting officer, the department.
Yeah, we can have a follow-up question. Okay, on the important issue of SFF. Thanks for the clarification, Honourable Pandale. So you see now, so there's no question of selling at a lower price. It is the time at which they sold. That's the issue, not how they sold at a lower price. So that's, I'm sorry to follow up with an attempt to that. But it's an important thing, that's for the portfolio committee. That had this, what did they call this investigation? Is it called forensic? I don't want to call it forensic. Yeah, but the minister has called for an investigation into all the contracts from 2014, so I suppose that from the point of view of the committee, we're going to have to make sure that the investigation is completed and that we can get a report on the investigation and to make sure that the collective action has been taken as a result of the investigation. But that doesn't stop us following up with SFF when they come here. I think in 2 weeks' time. Okay. First week of November. Okay, we have a full follow-up question, so that we need to close this just before the meeting.
Yes, sorry, I told you I don't hear so well, so I missed some points, and I just want to make sure that I understand it properly, because we need to. And the accounting authority is the minister who appoints the board, right? Who appoints the board, and she delegates her authority but not responsibility. I think that's the way it works. Or does she delegate the authority to the DD, who then delegates that authority to the board, but ultimately the minister stays accountable, if I understand it right. I just need to know how the line of it works, because you only have one person that can account and that can be responsible. So you can't have three different structures, they're all accountable. There's one top person which I think delegates the authority but can't delegate the responsibility. So she has to make sure that the people she appoints do the right thing, otherwise she stays accountable for that. And just explain a little more on that, and if I understand that right. Then the numbers of this oil. We had 10 million barrels of oil, now we are selling it at a lower rock bottom price. If we picked the right time, we could have made a huge profit. And that huge profit, we could have then re-plowed back into buying some more oil at a lower price. So we would have had more oil, which would have strengthened our security of supply, which would have taken it from 20 days to about 60 days where it should sit, I think. And then when we sell it, we get the money, and then they go and pump it out of the tank, and now they find out there's not that 10 million barrels of oil. So there's, I think, 1.1 million barrels of oil that they can't pump. So now they must give the money back to them for overselling that. And then they obviously, we give the money back at the going rate, or is it the same rate as what we bought it at, or what we sold it at that low bottom rate. So when we hear, they tell us, they put out statements to say that we have collected 5 million rand for the 10 million barrels of oil, and now that has gone down to 3.9, and I see, and I think there's 2. I saw on the, there's only 2.3 or 2.4 billion rand that's set in the equalization fund. Because the law states that if they sell the oil, the money must go to the equalization fund. And there's not 5 billion rand in the equalization fund, so what happened to the rest of the money? Is that what you are talking about? They invested it somewhere else and they're trying to make a profit out of it. They are not an investment company, so how can they invest it in something else? I don't think it is allowed to do that. And then, so they only sold actually 8.9 million barrels. I just want to get the figures right. So when we ask them, we know what we are talking about. And then that 1.1 million barrels that is staying in the tank, which is unpumpable, that is written off as a loss. How many times do you have to write off that 1.1 million barrels? Because if the tank is full, they leave it in the bottom. They don't clean the tank. They leave it because they need it for the next a lot of crude oil that comes in to mix it and to make it flowable. Otherwise, it won't flow or something. That's the way I understand it. They left it in the 1.1 million barrels, stayed in the tank. It wasn't that it was short. It had to be left in the tank. It was unpumpable. And it was 1.1 million barrels. And then the interesting thing is, how do they know there's 1.1 million barrels short if the money is still, if the oil is still in the tank? They must have pumped it. Where did they pump it to? Is it still in the tank? Did you go and maybe make sure it's there? I think if they say it's there, it must be there. And how do they know that there is this loss if they have now only, if they shouldn't have pumped it, that they did pump it? And how do we make sure that oil stays in the tank and they don't take it out very quickly? Because I hear there are people building a facility very close by that is wanting to take that oil out because they want it out of government's hands. They want it out of government's control so they can do with it what they want. Then did I understand EnviroServe is the company that loaned the 300,000 barrels of oil? EnviroServe, is that the name? I couldn't make it out so well. And then on the 300,000 barrels of oil that they loaned, why did they loan it? I mean, you said they loaned it and they couldn't give it back. Why did they loan it? Who decided on that and why was the contract not concluded before that? Did you ask them about the reasons why they would loan our oil, not follow due process, and now sit with a red face that they are not paying for it? And then I also wanted to know if EnviroServe actually does other contracts with government, and if they don't want to pay back, we just fine them or cancel their contracts with other suppliers. That I need to understand, please. There was something else I wanted to ask, and it was about the 10 million liters of diesel that was purchased. Do we know who it was purchased from? And do we know what it was purchased for? Was it when we were in trouble with electricity and we had to have emergency measures to supply diesel to Ankerlich and the power stations? Was that part of that 10 million liters that was procured? Thank you very much.
Yes, another one. Thanks, Chair. I no longer have questions, but Chair, I'm shocked by the manner in which this FFF is put out there. I think more questions will be directed to them when they come forward. Because I don't think really we'll be making justice to us, the Auditor General's office, about the conduct of other entities which they vote. Suffice to say, Chair, that how do you sell a house and later come back and rent a home? I don't think there is logic. It is not different to those who get the RTP houses. They rent the RTP houses and give checks for themselves. Because if you sell the asset and come back to rent it,
then it means you do not have rabies. The vision of what you want to do is just my comment to say. I think we have heard of the information, then that empowers us. We have to make our own research, say how far do we go with this question.
Thank you, Chief. Just to answer the question on the executive authority and the accounting authority, the member I think is almost spot on. The executive authority is responsible for ensuring that the accounting officer, which is the DG, and then the accounting authority at each of the boards do what is required of them. So the DG of the department does not assign his authority to the accounting authorities of the board of directors of the entities. Each one of them are separately accountable for whatever goes on within the entity. So your board is responsible for in the entity. If the board or the DG doesn't do their job, the minister is responsible for making sure that they get help to talk.
Quickly, let me touch on the part of the EQF. Well, in terms of the SAS Act, Section 3A, it says it must be paid over into the EQF, the equalization fund, the money obtained by SAS or SFF from the sale of the football. So what we propose to SFF at the end of the year is to recognize the proceeds from those sales. You know, recognize the liability to transfer that back into the EQF. In other words, don't keep it here within your jurisdiction or your care. Transfer it to the EQF, and when the time comes for you to say you want to buy the ball now again, then the money can be transferred back so that it's not easily accessible, and also to comply with the Act. And just to also highlight that, I mean, we know the people get, like the honorable member rightly pointed to say, you should have done this, you should have done that. But when you do those things, all we recommend is to have the right process around it. Follow the law. As you said, National Treasury was not informed that they should have. You know, the right internal control environment policies and procedures were not in place at the time. That maybe someone will say, you know, we have lost out here. We could have gotten more than we could have. So that's all that we are pointing out.
Thank you. I think on the issue of what happened to the rest of the fund, the SSF did invest those funds. So we did obtain the information that whatever that was. And then on the issue of the technical diesel purchase, we do have the name because the land the name of the company is Life Petroleum.
Life Petroleum.
Yeah, in Zimbabwe. And the issue of 300,000, the one that was sold to that company is EnviroShop. EnviroShop. Sure. Yeah. Can you just spell that last one? EnviroShop. EnviroShop. Sure. And then I'll hand over to my colleagues in terms of EnviroShop. They do have other contracts with SFF. And the last meeting that we've attended, the audit committee that we've attended, the audit committee members were deliberating to say, if they fail to honor this contract of the 300,000, should we then keep their other contracts, or should when we terminate both the contracts that they have with SFF? So that is the discussion. make a decision whether they can make all the contracts that they have with the supplier.
Thank you. I'm going to touch on the EnviroShore transaction. The EnviroShore is a company that actually had a contract with SFF for concession oil agreement at the Orchid facility. As part of that agreement, the reasoning behind this agreement was EnviroShore actually needed some crude oil to actually kick off their operation. So as part of the agreement also, they came up to a split between SFF on the condition that whatever crude oil they extract, there will be a 3-to-1 ratio. So the entity will keep one of that 3% of the recovered crude oil. But as part of that agreement, they have to give them 300,000 barrels. And as rightfully said by my colleague, as at year end, the board of directors have instructed management to actually consider terminating the concession agreement as well as instituting legal action to actually recover those 300,000 barrels. Now, part of the EnviroShore, they have come up with many excuses not to settle a grand amount for the 300,000 barrels. The argument is that they want to actually bring back those barrels of crude oil. But that's something that management is actually looking into and taking legal action. Okay. And then details around the diesel sales. The diesel sales, they did buy the diesel from a group called Line Petroleum Group from Zimbabwe. Initially, SFF obtained a letter of credit to stand in. So should something happen between Line Petroleum and Line Petroleum could not settle the bank, which was Standard Bank, SFF would have to step in. So in this case, Line Petroleum did make a few payments of the total amount of $80 million, but then SFF had to step in now to settle the balance of that letter of credit. So that's where we say SFF did not follow the procurement process, because if they did go the procurement process, they would have to obtain all of that, go out and tender basically, to identify the supplier and then follow that entire process. So in this case, when they then made payments to Standard Bank to settle letter of credit, we raised it as non-compliance with the procurement process. So that was done. And then also, with regards to the transaction, what happened was, once they realized now that they had settled the letter of credit, they went back to Line Petroleum Group to raise it as a sale. To raise it as a sale. Subsequent to that, the amount was actually impaired. They could not receive it. However, as at year end and to this existing point, the board of directors have instructed management to go back to Line Petroleum Group and see how they can actually recover the diesel that's sitting with the Line Petroleum Group. So that's something that they actually looking into. And then, yeah, I think that's
that we had bought the diesel, but we didn't buy it, we sold it to somebody that didn't pay us. Is that it? The Line Petroleum diesel?
It's actually two ways. Remember, it's actually two ways. Because the first part of it is that letter of credit, the diesel was what? That's the first part of the diesel, but we actually make a cut of it. Once the sale was done. However, because the purchaser couldn't honor the letter of credit to Standard Bank, SFF stepped in to settle the full amount. So meaning then that they actually bought that diesel over.
Okay, so Lemon Scott and close. Thanks very much.